We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
Welcome to Dads on the Air for the 7th of July, 2009. Should be an interesting show coming up. First up, we're going to be talking with, first up, we'll be talking with Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency about the story of how the Ombudsman has criticised the Child Support Agency over stopping fathers leaving Australia. It's a fairly totalitarian regime where they stop anyone they deem to owe money overseas. Then we'll be talking with Maurice Vellacott. He is the Canadian MP who has introduced a shared parenting bill into the Canadian Parliament. And after that, we'll be talking again with Sue Price, who'll be talking about the spirited campaign in Australia to oppose the shared parenting laws. There's been women all dressed up with blood-stained outfits, and you name it. The critics of this campaign have condemned it as hysterical and ill-informed nonsense, and Sue Price will be talking about that as well. And then we'll close the show talking with Michael Green. He is the author of Shared Parenting, and that is one of the sort of standard texts on shared parenting. He's a very knowledgeable man, so Michael Green QC, long an advocate of shared parenting as the only sensible outcome post-separation. First up, though, we're talking with Sue Price. Now, Sue, what's this story? Are you there, Sue?
It's a very, very interesting one. The Ombudsman has released a report during June, actually. I'm not quite sure how we all missed it, but we shouldn't have. But it is a very, very critical report on the behaviour of the Child Support Agency in the way that they issue their departure prohibition orders. There are about 1,000 of them so far being issued in Australia, and I think they've got a targeted amount of about 4,000 they want to achieve. But what they said, the Ombudsman's report focused on 21 cases where DPOs were issued and complaints were made. All of the cases were found to be problematic, and many of the DPOs were invalid. Only in one case had the agency proved the payer had persistently and without reasonable grounds failed to pay their child support debt. Now, the head of the Ombudsman, Professor McMillan, said the Child Support Agency had a lack of quality in decision-making processes that could lead to serious errors and invalid DPOs.
Well, that's something everybody knows that has ever dealt with them, that they're deficient in their decision-making processes.
Absolutely right, John, but for at last we have official recognition that their decision-making processes in this particular area are invalid and seriously detrimental to parents. And, of course, we know that goes across the board with child support.
Now, can you just explain for people who've never heard of this and can't believe that in a country like Australia people are being prohibited? We've often called them perhaps economic refugees who actually want to leave Australia so they can make something of their lives because the regime here is so draconian.
Look, it's so nonsensical. It means that anyone who has a child support debt, unless they have made arrangements to repay that debt or repay the debt in full, can be stopped at the airport through the issuing of what's called a departure prohibition order that just needs to be signed by a member of the child support agency. There's no court order or any procedure like that.
So you can be blocked from leaving Australia, from going about your lawful business, either as on a holiday or for business or whatever reason you have to come and go.
You can have your tickets booked. You can arrive with your suitcases at the airport and the police will just tell you, no, sorry, you can't leave. And the only way you can have a departure prohibition order lifted is by making an application to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal.
Which is a massively complex process.
Well,
isn't it?
What it turns out they're doing is stopping some people who are actually going overseas to be employed to go and work at a new job where they will have an increased income, enabling them to actually pay the high levels of child support that are demanded of them. So how stupid is that?
Right. So yes, I've heard of this. People who say get quite well-paying jobs in Dubai or somewhere like that, which a lot of Australians do, they can't go. So in fact, they can't. It's just insane.
And there was one poor man who wasn't allowed to go, who was trying to see his relatives who were ill, who were desperately ill, and he just couldn't go. They wouldn't. His parents paid for the tickets, and they wouldn't allow him to leave the country.
That's mind-boggling. His own parents are dying, but this lovely government agency is going to block him from seeing his parents before they die.
Yes.
Is this what would you call it? Fascism? Communism?
Outrageous.
Outrageous.
I can't think of any other more suitable word, quite frankly, John.
Now, you say there's a target, is there, of 4,000. They want to impose this on 4,000 people. They're just not happy with the 1,000 they've got already.
Yeah, the report questioned the agency's target to issue an additional, sorry, I'm a little bit wrong, 4,500 DPOs by 2010 as a way of cracking down on child support debt. And Professor McMillan questions whether it's appropriate for the CSA to have such targets for matters of this type. But, of course, we all know that the CSA staff have performance targets on which their performance bonus rests if they achieve their target.
So the more lives they mess up, the more they get paid, is that right?
The more they collect, the more money collect, the more they entitled to a performance bonus.
Unbelievable. And, of course, many of these debts, aren't they, are disputed. I mean...
Oh, absolutely. But there's no requirement for the Child Support Agency to prove the debt. All they have to do is make the statement that this is the debt that's owed. So if you want to challenge it, you've actually got to go into court to challenge it.
Right, but they don't have to produce any evidence.
No.
And as we all know, their idea of evidence is just whatever Mum says.
No, well, of course, a lot of the back debts occur through the review process where a review officer makes a determination that backdates a back debt to another.
And anyone who's dealt with those review officers know that they're a disgrace within themselves.
Yeah, that's right. So suddenly you can end up, you don't owe anything owing perhaps $10,000 or more.
Oh, there are stories of people getting seven different letters with seven different amounts within a week from the people.
I think 28 in one day was the record.
Oh, really? Seriously? Yes. 28 letters?
Yes.
So you think they have well earned their reputation as one of the most hated institutions in Australia?
I think so, yes. And you've got the other one. Your listeners may have seen the news last night where the new minister, Chris Bowen, is claiming that they're collecting more money through a sugar-coated trap. If you wanted to get your $900, you had to put in a tax return.
Oh, yeah.
And people like Kathleen Swinburne and a single mother, Tanya White, were gloating that, you know, they waved the carrot in front of all these fathers and they've got them, and they're collecting huge amounts of money from them. Whereas in actual fact, they're claiming another 11,000 people are now having to pay back debts, but they're only collecting about $1,200 per head, which seems to me a very insignificant amount when you consider, figures of about $130-odd million being given to child support to set up a debt recovery program, and that's only a couple of years ago.
Right, so they've got, what was it, $1,200 from how many people did they get?
11,000.
Which, my maths isn't that good this morning. That isn't much over a million, is it?
Well, you're looking at about $13 million.
So it's costing them a damn sight more to harass everybody than they actually get out of them.
I believe so, yes. I think that it's a very false economy, very much a false economy the way they're approaching it. And, of course, they're creating chaos for these people in their lives. They can't afford to pay the amounts that are demanded because the amounts are still too high.
Oh, just absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd. You can pay over 80% in tax and child support in this country, and that is debt prison, essentially.
That's right, except we don't send them to prison like they do in the US. We'd like to keep them out in the workforce so that they are productive.
Yeah, except so many of them don't see much point in working because it's just they're not getting any of the money.
Well, I think they're distraught that one of the primary considerations is not seeing their children, John. They don't have any interaction with their children at all because it has been proven repeatedly in research that fathers who have good contact with their children are more than happy to pay support for them.
Right. Okay, well, we'll be back in a moment. All right. Well, we'll just play. We're just going to go before. We'll talk to Sue Price later in the show about the demonstrations outside family courts around Australia. We're going to come back in a little while with Maurice Vellacott after the break, and he's the Canadian MP who's introducing equal share parenting laws in Canada. First off, we're going to pay his address to the Parliament. Here it is.
Unfortunately, many Canadian families experience the breakup of a marriage, and when this happens, the results can be devastating for children. Children are caught in the middle, but should not be used as a weapon or alienated from one of the parents. Aside from proven abuse or neglect, Canadians want equal shared parenting to be the presumption in our courts when marriages break up, because it is in the best interest of children and because it's part of an enlightened equality agenda. A recent poll I commissioned conducted by Nanos Research shows that 78% of Canadians support equal shared parenting, with a high of 86% support in the province of Quebec. More women than men support equal shared parenting at 78.3%, and among supporters of major political parties, about 78% of Conservatives support equal shared parenting, 75.8% of the NDP, 80.6% of Liberals supported equal shared parenting, and 83% of Bloc supporters endorsed equal shared parenting. An equal shared parenting private members bill was introduced in Parliament today, and I urge you to support it and expedite its passage through Parliament.
As sure as the sun in the morning will rise, and the moon casting shadows will follow so wise, we won't stop loving a child that is lost till the end of our days, and no matter what cost. As sure as the shape of a circle is round, and four corners in every where can be found, we love our children, our own flesh and blood, despite our alienation, which came like a flood.
Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me.
As sure as the rising tide will come in, and there's no one on earth who's without sin, as loving fathers for our children we pine. But our spirit's not broken, nor our will in decline. As sure as it be, will be followed by war, and some will be rich, some will be poor. We want to protect our children from harm, but we are prevented and try to stay calm.
Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free. Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me.
As sure as in colors, black is not white, and food we must eat to stay healthy and sprite. We won't turn our back on our children we love, though some days it's hard and the going gets tough, as some will die young and others grow old. Some tell their story while others withhold. As fathers we care and will never give up the love of our children, which some try to obstruct.
Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me. Set them free, let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, let it rest, let it be.
summer voice like you.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
And we're talking with Maurice Vellacott. He's the MP from Canada who's introducing shared parenting legislation into the parliament there. Are you there, Maurice?
I am here, and it's good to be on your show, John.
Well, thanks very much for coming on. This is fascinating. The high levels of support, I'm surprised. Well, actually, the surveys in Australia have shown similar levels of support, but can you just run us through that, just how popular this notion is?
For sure. Yeah, certainly, John. In a series of polls over the number of years here in Canada on this subject of equal shared parenting, registered high levels of support, and the recent poll that I commissioned just back in the spring here, conducted by Nanos Research here, showed that just under 80% of Canadians support equal shared parenting, and more women than men actually support equal, high in both genders, obviously, but even more women than men slightly. So that's a very encouraging thing across the country here. And on a partisan basis, it really is not partisan. It's one of the most apolitical, nonpartisan pieces of legislation or issue, if you will. When you have supporters of major political parties, my party, the Conservative Party, about 78% of conservatives, or those who say they vote conservatives, support equal shared parenting. About 75.8% of the NDP, which leans a little more to the left in our country. 80.6% of the Liberals, which is just kind of center left, I guess, if you will.
All right, the Liberals are the Conservatives in Australia.
Yeah, I think the Liberals, the Conservative Party in Canada, would more compare to, is it the party called the Liberals there in Australia?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
So that's kind of the spectrum. And then out in Quebec itself, we always have this issue of one major party only running, well, it's a party that runs only in the province of Quebec. It's called the Bloc Québécois, and they are more for French separation from the rest of Canada. But in those that support the Bloc Québécois, 83% supporters endorse equal share parenting. So actually, the highest support level for equal shared parenting is out in the east. It's high all across the country, right through the west. But in Quebec, 86%.
Is there any reason why it is so high in Quebec?
Well, we've tended over the years because they've had less of marriage and more kind of common law. But I guess then they've maybe had more marriages break down, might be the pattern there. It tends to be a more liberal province, small L liberal, if you will.
Right. But
I would only speculate that might be some of the reason they've seen more of the breakdown of relationships, common law and marriages, and therefore why they continually seem to gauge very high support for equal shared parenting if they experience some of the difficult, the fallout of broken spousal marital relationships, and therefore believe that it's in the best interest of children to have both the mom and the dad continue to be actively involved in the lives of the children.
Now, in Australia, we're seeing there's been demonstrations outside the court. There was a fairly very moderate, to our view, reforms of family law in Australia, where there was some movement towards shared parenting, but it wasn't complete. And there is now going on with a left-wing government in power a lot of spirited campaigns by women outside family courts with blood-stained shirts and all this sort of thing, claiming that shared parenting exposes children to abusive parents, and it's broken down really along gender lines. You're not seeing any of that in Canada?
Well, not to this point. In fact, we think that across the genders and across the party lines at this point, there will obviously be a very active vocal groups, possibly special interest groups, if you will, that will try to make attacks and accusations or allegations as they have there. Some of my strongest advocates as individual members of parliament so far are those that would identify or self-identify as strong feminist individuals. But they say when you have equal shared parenting, then you have, in fact, if you don't have equal shared parenting and all the burden for the care of the children falls to the woman in terms of the day-to-day kind of experience of that, then there's less likelihood that a woman will be able to re-enter the workforce, the education opportunities, those kind of things. And if a man is involved actively, not just in terms of financial support, but he would more likely be willing to help in providing extras, be it sports and various other those kind of things that children need and want, their post-secondary education and so on as well. So that's what we believe the message should be, and we'll continue to reinforce. It's really, as the Liberal leader, the official leader of the opposition, not the party for which I represent, but I certainly agree with him here, and he's a man who's written a fair bit before he came into political life, and he says that these various groups demanded that the custody and access regime created by the Divorce Act of 1985 in Canada be replaced with a shared parent regime in which both parents are given equal rights to bring up their children. These are sensible and overdue suggestions, and the fact that they're being made shows that women, that men and women are struggling to correct the rights revolution so that equality works for everyone. So we really do believe that it's part of an enlightened equality agenda so that it works for both men and women. It's fair for all. And particularly in the interest, the best interest of the children. And this really jumps off, John, a report, a joint Senate House of Commons report here in Canada of just a little more, better than 10 years ago, yeah, called For the Sake of the Children. Mm-hmm. And a number of good recommendations in that report, John, a very well put together report. One of those was the issue of equal shared parenting, among other good recommendations that they brought forward. So that report has kind of been on the shelf or collected dust, as some of these good reports do, and there hasn't been a follow through and an implementation of it.
So
and then we realize that there may be issues and groups out there that will try to oppose it at the entrenched status quo, but we think there's some fairly good response to all of those things that people bring up for the best interest of children and for moms and dads as well.
Oh, I know. As anyone knows, being a single parent is really difficult, and I just—it's really hard to comprehend why there would be any opposition to sharing the care of your kids. I mean, apart from the fact that with the kids goes the money, goes the house, goes the car, goes the child support.
Right. Well, and very definitely over consistently in the English-speaking world and other languages as well, the social science demonstrates that when there's the active support of both, even in the unfortunate breakdown of a marriage situation, that if they can work it out for the best interest and for the sake of the children, that it's the better outcomes. The social sciences indicate very clearly that there's better outcomes when children experience and have the ongoing, continuing active of both their mom and their dad. And so I think that, you know, quite aside from what people want to come out, if you listen to the and follow the social science, it demonstrates in spades, John, yeah, that the outcomes for children, if we're looking out for the best interests of children and for the future, which is the future of society, then the social science is very, very clear. There's no mistake, no question about that.
So the opponents of this are really concerned about a loss of power and money, which is a typical.
Well, I would suppose that might be it. Maybe a perceived, you know, at that. I think there's something quite empowering about seeing your children thrive and flourish and do well and be healthy, you know, real well adjusted and all that, and not some of those negative social outcomes when we know, you know, the sciences, as I said, very clearly attest. In terms of involvement with the criminal justice system, the other psychological things, there's various of those things that are there and well beyond, I guess, what we'll be able to cover off today. In Canada, just for your listeners and for people at that end that are doing the look over some of the research, there's a very good report put together, some very good work done by an Edward Kruk, and that's spelled K-R-U-K, and he is out of the University of British Columbia. And he's put something, he's doing ongoing research, extensive and heavy in-depth research, child custody access and parental responsibility, and it's been subtitled The Search for a Just and Equitable Standard. So he makes very plain, you know, the whole approach for equal shared parenting that ought to be followed through and carried through in every country around the world because of the better positive outcomes for all concerned.
Morris, one of the main issues that most parents struggle with is the enforcement the compliance.
Right.
And many feel that should be in the criminal justice system where the perjury and so on can be taken care of, because the family court does not have a proper enforcement instrumentality. What's your views on that?
Right. Well, certainly the case, and within Canada we have somewhat the same situation, I expect, as there in Australia and elsewhere. But when this particular bill, the bill C-422, would be directing the courts to enforce and to get as a presumption that of equal shared parenting, and then out of that would simply flow the matter of the practice of it throughout the provinces across the country. Because you do have in Canada, as I'm sure you do have there, where people will make these false allegations or accusations, if you will. They've got nothing to lose because it's not the normal rules of evidence as would pertain in a court. And as a result, you've got nothing to lose. So one or the other makes accusations against the other sexually or physically assaulting the children. And as a result, they will then sometimes be able to lever and have at least temporary custody. But possession is sometimes 9/10 of the law. So once you establish, the child is with you over that initial number of months, and the courts then tend to perpetuate that. And that's a problem. Whereas, in fact, if you had, as you say, individuals that had to, come up to the normal rules of evidence on this, and, in fact, if there was false accusations or allegations being made, then there would be a consequence for it. And you can't be flippantly or frivolously doing this without a consequence. And so there would be charges of mischief brought against individuals who would be doing it just as a tool, if you will, to get, in a very nasty way. And it's proven most often that these are unfounded. And so in this particular bill,
the jurisdiction is rife with false allegations, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And in Canada, it is as well. And because, as you say, and I expect that, unfortunately, it's handled in much the same way around the world, because there's not that normal rules of evidence that pertain in a court are not required in this situation, then people get away with doing it, and there's no repercussions, if you will. There's no consequences brought to bear against them. And as a result, people, they use it as stock and trade. They use it as a tool, as a weapon. In fact, lawyers, it tends to be encouraged, it would seem, and that's our understanding from, some of the conversations we've had across the country, would encourage the use of that in the custody proceedings with children.
So wouldn't they be better off in the criminal justice system to be dealt with in that, where, for instance, perjury is...
Yeah.
Where, for instance,
if it's definitely the nature of you're accusing someone of sexual assault or physical assault, these are serious kind of allegations being made. They're criminal, in fact. So it should be elevated. It should be in a criminal court proceeding or scenario where there's pretty rigorous standards of evidence there. And if you make these malicious, mischievous kinds of claims, and without any falsehood, and they're dismissed at the end of the day, then there can be recourse against the person who makes those kind of false, malicious claims without any basis or substantiation.
Now, Mr. Vellacott, how did it come about that you were the person that put this bill forward?
Well, that'd be interesting for your hearers to know how in the political process of things these things do work and play out. Just to give you some quick background there, and you will have Vellacotts in Australia. I happen to know that. There's
All right.
Vellacott.
I've never heard the name before.
Yeah, it's my grandma was to come from Liverpool, Grandpa homesteading in Canada, so Grandma was to come on the Titanic, and with her sister, and I think there was 7 kids in total in those 2 households, with the 2 women bringing across one of the kids. My aunt had ringworm, and as a result, at the docks there, the medical health officer for the Titanic turned him away, and we're quite grateful for that. But you do have Vellacotts there. And I have been myself a prior to entering political life directly, at least on the federal level, I was a pastor for a number of years and served also as a college teacher in a Christian college setting in Canada here. So I had the privilege and the opportunity to work with families and children, marriages, marital stresses, breakdowns of marriages and so on, all those kind of things through the course of my pastoral life. And my heart was really drawn into those situations. My heart would go out to those situations. Sometimes we were able to bring a marriage situation back together. In other cases, not so. But no matter, in any event, children should not be used as a weapon or alienated from one of the parents. That became a strong fundamental belief of mine. And that, I guess, in the span of things, that, you know, in terms of the society that we have and a strong society, we've got that of life is pretty important. Obviously, if you don't have life, all the rest doesn't matter. But then comes marriage. Preventively, if we can prevent difficulties coming in marriage, because there's always going to be strains. There's no perfect marriages. And then when, unfortunately, you know, with best efforts, sometimes there's a seeming breakdown of that, family is still important and will continue to be. And you should not be taking out of a man or a woman's life their own progeny, their children. They should have a continued involvement. So those became kind of core beliefs of mine out of that background, out of I have an earned doctoral degree as well from a university in the United States. So in those years of practice, if you will, and study, that became fairly strong. But I guess more than anything, John, it kind of came together in terms of I've been a member of Parliament now 12 years. So I'd say 4 or 5 years ago at a conservative function out in Ontario, where we were doing a kind of a summer caucus retreat, if you will, then a fine lady, Chris Titus, who is one of the co-founders of the Canadian Equal Parenting Council, CEPC, which comprises about 40 organizations across Canada. And that fine group is headed up by George Pisker and Chris Titus, so a man and a woman. And they're very diligent, dedicated people. So out of that event, at that barbecue, they bought tickets. I mean, it was mostly the political types that were there and the members of Parliament. So they talked to different ones. I mean, they were members of the party, I take it, and bought their, you know, $10, $15 barbecue ticket, whatever it was. But they were there for another purpose as well, and that was to interact with members of Parliament. So they had that conversation with me, as they did with others, and because, I guess, in Providence, you would say, but my heart was ready and open, receptive, ripe to this kind of a thing. And so at their urging, our followed-up contact from there, and at their urging, as I began to get more intimately involved and knowledgeable, I guess you would say, of some of the circumstance in Canada, as these folk know very well academically and from first-hand experience, then this began that kind of journey, if you will, where I began to, and in the last parliament I...
And began to make history. Morris, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back. So we'll just take a quick break now and we'll come back and we'll finish that bit of the story and then we'll talk further about... we're talking with Morris Vellacott. He is making history by introducing a shared parenting bill into Canada, which has massive support right across the country, as indeed shared parenting polls have shown in Australia as well. There is massive support for this. We'll be back in a moment.
Yeah.
grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
Morris, are you there?
I am here. I'm back on.
Oh, great. Okay. So what part of Canada are you actually in?
I'm in Western Canada, the province of Saskatchewan, and riding I represent is Saskatoon-Wanuskewin. So it's out in the west of Canada.
It's amazing, the technology, isn't it? Now, look,
it is, yeah.
Can you just talk about some of the... we've often argued on this show that the sole custody model is just the wrong model and does enormous damage to people and to parents and children. Can you talk about some of what you've seen, the damage being done?
Well, I mean, it's very clear, as I said earlier, John, that the social sciences clearly indicate and demonstrate some of the study here unique to Canada but done elsewhere as well. Show that we should have this shared parenting presumptive legislation because it results in lower court costs, less conflict, improved social outcomes for the children of divorce. So in Canada here you have, as I take it similarly in Australia, more of an adversarial, what we call winner-takes-all kind of approach, as some of
Absolutely.
The academics have termed it. Mm. Yeah. And it's very unfortunate that it has to be that way. I have found more often than not, and I very graphically recall some of the conversations I've had when both the mom and the dad run out of money is the point when finally they resolve it, you know, and they get a shared kind of a shared equal parenting kind of a scenario. Up to that point, when one has, or if the woman has money, or if the guy has the money, then they're both going to take the other down, and they're going to fight right to the nth degree, and it's that kind of situation. But if you have in law, in legislation, the presumption of shared equal parenting, that's the basis, that's the get-go, then and get used to it, and then you work it out from there. You're under no strain to be in a competition to win, winner takes all, sole custody kind of thing. So this is encouraging divorcing spouses to assume more responsibility for their affairs with less reliance on the, as you say, the adversarial processes, promoting that joint responsibility, joint decision-making by spouses in respect of ongoing child care, the nurturing, the development, and so on. Establishing, and that's what the bill does too, and refers to different things in that domain, that the best interests of the child are served through maximal ongoing parental involvement with the child, and that the rebuttable presumption of equal parenting is the starting point for judicial deliberation. So when there's moving toward the dissolution or breakdown of a marriage, then people already should have clear in their head that, you know, coming out the other side here, your beginning point is that of 50%, you know, equal shared parenting, if you will. So that's the presumption. That's, you know, so begin to work it out from there. In course of time, the intent here and the specifics of this particular bill would less and less involve lawyers. There may always be those high conflict situations that will require the courts. But the point is, over time, and there's going to be lots of lawyer work, even in Canada or these places, because you're going to have a situation where existing situations will have to be kind of worked out and adjusted and so on. They tell me that lawyers that are involved in this area of work, this line of work, if you will, burn out fairly quickly and move on to other things in practice. So there might be some pushback from the legal profession to say that you're going to kind of take some work away from us,
yeah.
But the end result will not be so much that they can move on to other...
And the heartbroken dad and the gloating mum will be a thing of the past, eh?
There's more productive things they can be doing, and actually for the foreseeable future in Canada, were this bill to be passed today, for that matter, there would be plenty enough work for, you know, till most of these people... retire or get on to something else.
You say there's massive support for this right across the political spectrum and in the public. Why then has it taken so long to get here?
Well, it is a good question. You know, when you've got the 10-year-old report for the sake of the children, I think it's just the lethargy, if you will. There have been those that have seen some advantage from the present system, not the least being lawyers, individuals... I suppose who want to keep it this way as things stand right now. I don't know all the reasons for that, but surely with the mounting evidence that shows you've got some fairly negative social outcomes with the present system, I think it's just a matter of time where you're going to see the demise of this. And so for us, for those of us involved in the cause and in the battle, if you will, here in Canada, we view it as a long-term thing. Even if we don't get this passed, because we, as you may understand, John, are in a minority government situation, in the last parliament I put forward a motion testing the waters in terms of the principle of equal shared parenting. It seemed we were getting good some good vibes, support from both genders, across party lines. We had quite a raft of seconders for my particular motion. And within, it was to be last fall, 2008, within a week it was to be debated in the parliament here. And then we had the call of the election, so it was cut short by that. So this time around, instead of going for the motion again, we thought, well, we'll just draft and flesh out the whole thing, get a thorough job done. We've got lots of good input from various of the 40-member groups, the Canadian Equal Parenting Coalition, our council. We've got from academics. We've got the for the Sake of the Children. We've got all kinds of good input. So we'll flesh out the bill. So we've got good legal drafters put to work on this and come up with the bill C-422.
And is the situation the same there as here, where you have a very reluctant family court or outright opposition from the family court and the family law industry for what the public would regard as a very sensible reform?
Yeah, well, I would think so. I mean, at this point, I would think you're going to have some reluctance. I mean, there's been more collaborative law beginning to be practiced, so although that is not tantamount to shared equal parenting, but there is a kind of a move in that direction. But I would think that probably among social workers and some of the legal professions, if you will, some within the legal profession will probably oppose this at first, as much because they don't understand it and the implications, for even their profession. So I think we may have some of that. But we actually had a very good strategy session here a couple months back at the Parliament with some various bodies, trying to anticipate what would be the objections, what would be the pushback from some different groups and what we might face. And as we dealt with that, it's one doesn't probably want to be, divulging all that on air today publicly. But
yes.
For the most part, I'd say that we were fairly encouraged to say that none of it was at all insurmountable. There was good responses to all of it. And, and it was the typical suspects, if you will, that we thought might have certain objections. But then we had some academic folk around the table there who've written and researched on this a fair bit, and they came up with some pretty plausible, some really classic kind of responses to these things that not just in an academic way, but in a practical way, John, I think would undermine or refute that. It kind of gets out of our control to some degree over the course of the months ahead, and then the media plays it out. But it has not been perceived negatively in the media. We've not had negative reporting of it at this point. And, we tell people as well, it may not be the perfect bill. We think we've gone a long way toward covering off the different aspects here. But there's going to be committee, there's going to be hearings, with groups represented from all sides as well.
Now, the major opposition in Australia is a small group of fairly radical women's groups who have been campaigning outside family courts, claiming that shared parenting legislation, and we've only got a very watered-down version of it here, but they are claiming that it's forcing women and children to have contact with abusive males. So what do you say to that argument?
Well, I don't know exactly what the truth of that is even there. I mean, I would suppose people can allege anything they want. I don't know what the facts are there on that in that country there. But I would be guessing that there's going to be a small, most of this stuff is maybe there's a small bit of truth or a grain of truth to it. And then it's kind of inflated and blown up out of proportions,
Yeah.
So maybe there's things that we need to take into account more fully. I think we've covered it off here, so that by very repeatedly and that we made this point, that except in the cases of proven abuse or neglect, not just allegations of same, but that this would be the presumption, except for cases of proven abuse or neglect. So if there is proven abuse or neglect, then that does take it into, tend to take it into a whole different realm of things, you know. But if there's not that, then we go with the presumption, or the courts would be directed to go with the presumption of shared equal parenting. But if they can, you know, if they can substantiate, if they can prove that there's abuse and neglect, and of course it's a higher standard or burden of proof, if you will, then of course, these women, I suppose, do have a point. But that is not at any stretch from anything and evidence
than the vast majority. Yeah,
to believe to be only a small percentage would be that. You know, the vast majority is not in that domain. So you don't write up legislation to deal.
With a tiny minority. Look, exactly.
You make the point to cover that off and to deal with that, to exclude it, because we don't want for women, we don't want for men, for that matter, we don't want for children to be abused, and you know, this to be a tool to that end, and it will not be because of the precautions that are written in.
Okay, well, we're running out of time, Morris, so could you just sum up basically the case for, as if you were standing in the court or in Parliament, and just say, what is the case for shared parenting? Why is it so important?
Well, it's for one, in the best interest of the child, you know, except, as we say, in proven cases of abuse or neglect. Brings Canadian legislation in line with the best research, what that says about the best interest of children. And with limited exceptions, children generally demonstrate superior outcomes when both parents, mom and dad, are actively involved in their children's lives, even if the parents divorce or separate. The bill here reflects the spirit of recommendations made over 10 years ago in the Joint House Senate Committee presented to Parliament entitled For the Sake of the Children. As we said, the polling that has been done, that I've commissioned recently again, indicates that about 80%, with a high of 86% in the province of Quebec, slightly more women than men support equal shared parenting among supporters of major political parties, 78% among conservatives, 75.8% among the NDP, which is most to the left, 80% of liberals, 83% of the Bloc Québécois. So this really has received expressions of support from parliamentarians here on a multi-party basis.
Because everyone's sick of the damage of the divorce industry.
Oh, exactly. It's obvious. I mean, all of us, to some degree and some closer than others, are affected by this, and they know the consequence or the outcome of the brokenness of the present Divorce Act in Canada. And then you look at some of the countries that have moved on this in terms of reform, Denmark, Belgium, Norway, some of the U.S. states, they have implemented equal parenting, joint custody, or shared parenting presumptive legislation, and that results in the lower court costs, the less conflict, the improved social outcomes for the children divorced. And in the years that I have been dealing with this issue, I've heard from so many men and women who have urged me to pursue these reforms. In just even the past week since having tabled this bill in the House of Commons in Canada, just an outpouring of thanks and appreciation from across Canada.
Right.
Many of these people are going to, over the summer, John, be working with their own members of Parliament as well as their provincial politicians to build that strong nonpartisan foundation for pursuing the lasting equal shared parenting reforms that will be in the best interests of Canadian children.
Thank you so much for coming on to Dad's on the Air. That was a wonderful interview. Thank you so much.
You bet. We've been probably, John, and maybe we'll do this again. I wish you well.
Very well. We'll get you back on when we see how it all goes. That was Morris Vellacott.
Okay.
He's the MP from Canada who's introducing shared parenting legislation into the Canadian Parliament. Congratulations. We'll be back shortly.
Substance abuse.
And we're back talking with Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency. There, Sue.
Hello, John.
Thanks very much for coming back on.
That's all right. Welcome.
Now, there's been a quite spirited campaign outside family courts, the Safer Family Law Campaign, I think it's called. Can you just tell us about that, what it's all about?
Yes, we have a group of people, mostly women, of course, who are led by an author called Barbara Biggs, who has written about four books about her own life. And she's assembled a petition and is calling on people to sign that. It's interesting to read, though, her preamble. She talks about it being protecting children and changing the legislation so that we get safer family law decisions. But when you analyse what she's actually written, she'll say the Family Court of Australia deals with child custody, access and shared parenting in cases of suspected domestic violence or sexual abuse. She doesn't particularly cover the other instances of abuse, such as neglect and physical violence or emotional abuse, for a particular reason, because when you actually get into reading the petition, it turns out she's calling for a review of the legal system in which the very lives of children are put shamefully at risk to dispel through legislation the current court myth that a violent husband can be a good father. The current system is ill-equipped to deal with psychological needs of children. If she was genuine about her concern to make the family court decision safer or more reliable, she would be calling for both to dispel the myths about both parents, both men and women. Because as you know and I know, and most other people who are well-read and have researched the issues, women present a far greater danger to children than do biological fathers.
So it's a campaign directly aimed at men.
Yes, it is. And the sad part about it, I think she's trying to emulate her own style of life for the children of separation these days. She claims in her books that she was virtually abandoned by her mother, and she became a prostitute at a fairly young age. She was sold into some sort of situation with a barrister at the age of 14 by her grandmother, but the strange thing is, in her book she has a family tree, but there is not one mention in the family tree of a grandfather, a father, an uncle. So her,
no men in the family tree at all.
No men in the family tree at all.
So
that really does put it into position what she thinks of men. She obviously sees them as being totally unnecessary in a child's life. So what she's actually doing, she's calling on the family court to remove from a child's life the very person who can protect the child, you know, the biological father. So she's wanting to see more children raised in the situation she was raised in by a single mother who was a prostitute, who had so many different men in their life, in the children's lives. I think it's five or six different men came and went, and she was born to, her father was one of her mother's clients. She doesn't know who he was and has never met him or never had any interaction with him. So that's what she's looking for. She's looking for the same sort of upbringing for our children nowadays whose parents go through a separation.
Now,
why? They want to alienate the father.
Now, these demonstrations, you know, with women covered with sort of fake blood and all this sort of thing, why is she wrong? I mean, why is the shared parenting legislation... Their claim is that shared parenting legislation is forcing people into these violent and abusive situations. Why is that argument wrong?
Well, I think it's wrong because shared parenting the shared parenting principles have done an enormous amount of good for children who are with separated parents. More children nowadays are able to spend time with each parent. More children are able to gain the benefits of each parent's input into their lives. And look, no matter how good a mother you are or how much you want to be, you know, the superwoman, you cannot be both a mother and a father to a child. A father in a child's life is absolutely essential, just as a mother is. But what we have to do with the family court is make sure that they are making the right decisions and If they prefer one parent over another, they must make sure that they're choosing the right parent. And unfortunately, our system of research in this country has tended to hide the fact that mothers can be extremely abusive towards their children. They certainly kill more children, and mothers' boyfriends are likewise pretty high in the list.
And what, do you think it's mainly sort of the entrenched powers of the court system and the family law industry, the domestic violence industry, that is blocking these sort of reforms? Is it the power of the status quo? All about power and money, as feminists say?
It is. They've decided that they can fund their industry through claims of domestic violence. So they make their money and they keep themselves in a job by providing more victims. Which isn't helpful to anybody, because all it's doing is teaching women to be afraid of the very person that can be their protector in life and can be their lover, their companion. But it's teaching women that, no, these people should be regarded as being a danger to you. And we have so few men who are, in actual fact, violent towards their wives. There are a number, just the same as there are a number of women who are violent towards their husbands or their partners. But the rest of society shouldn't be judged on this small number. So we're creating a situation where we're trying to say there are all these violent people. It's not true. There aren't that many violent people. We should be looking at the majority rather than the minority issue.
So some people have labelled this campaign as hysterical and dishonest. Do you think that's going too far?
Oh, I think she's on a... yes, I think I agree. I don't think it's going too far at all. I think she's on a crusade. She's an author who is trying to promote herself and her books. She's had a pretty, not a distinguished lifestyle by any means. It's distinguished by its sordidness. That would be the only clarification I would put on it. And she is now trying to make a name for herself and validate her existence and sell her books, obviously, by becoming a leader of this crusade to rescue women and children from supposedly violent men.
Look, we're a bit tight for time. Do you just want to sum up mainly the problems with these demonstrations? Because, of course, they're getting a lot of attention amongst the media and politicians and so on and so forth.
They're getting attention, and I had a meeting with the Attorney General, Robert McClellan, the other night, and he worries me because they are concerned, and they have put it in writing, that they are concerned by the decisions that the family court might be making where children are placed at risk. This is because they're looking at fathers as being the danger, because they're listening to a number of women who are, in my opinion, many of them are dysfunctional. They have been found out by the family court to be unsuitable parents, and they have lost residency of their children, but they can't live with that fact, so they have to go about justifying the reasons why this has happened to them. These people need psychological counselling, and they need some assistance to come to terms with the fact that their parenting skills were just simply lacking. And the court realised that and didn't award them residency of their children.
And the government's listening to them.
And the government's listening to them because you know what they say about the squeaky wheel.
The squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
That was Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency. Thank you so much for coming on to Dad's on the Air.
Thank you, John.
Always a great and very entertaining, very interesting guest. So thank you very much. We'll be back. And we're talking with Michael Green. He's the author of Shared Parenting. You there, Michael?
I am, John. Good morning, everybody.
Well, thank you very much for coming back onto Dads on the Air. Haven't had you on for a while.
My pleasure.
Now, look, there's quite a spirited campaign going on against the shared parenting laws that were introduced last year. Can you talk about what is the evidence for shared parenting? Why are these people wrong?
Well, they're wrong because, and I need to give you a fairly lengthy answer to this. I'm sorry, it's not capable of just a simple answer.
No,
because
away you go.
It's best for kids. It's best for kids. We know that. But, you know, negatively, we know that the old system of maternal custody or maternal involvement and very little father involvement, it's no good and it's not working. It's not working in intact families as well as separated families. That's the negative part of it. I was only reading in the Sydney Morning Herald today how we've got across Australia on any night 1,000 kids locked up in detention centres, half of them Indigenous. I wonder, you know, how many of those have had the involvement of a good and caring father, and it's a relationship there.
Probably zero.
You know, the present system hasn't been working well at all. That's the negative thing. The positive is that all the research and our experience indicates that the involvement of both father and mother, two parents in the life of a child, boys and girls, inevitably produces kids who are better, have better values, have better balance, who do better at school, in and out of school, and in their professional and their social and personal lives. Now, the research has been done into this more recently in the and it's always the better research is generally the more recent stuff, mainly in the United States. And, you know, you've only got to listen to that senior, very senior woman in her 60s, Joan Kelly of California, who says directly, with all her experience as a scientist, a psychologist, a clinician, the best voice across the world in this area of family relationships and breakdown, says the loss, the greatest loss for a child in separation divorce is the loss of a relationship with one parent, normally the father. Now, I mean, she's a woman of immense reputation and experience and age. She wouldn't say these things. So it's not the loss, as the those who are against shared parenting say, of you know,
stability or something.
Instability and all of that type of nonsense, or, you know, it'll be too disruptive for them moving from home to home. That's not a loss at all. Kids can adapt to that. But can I just add this, John? The current campaign by a feminist against shared parenting needs to be identified and nailed on the head. It's simply a war against men, particularly fathers, and it is a war about money and power. That's simply what it's about.
So the feminists got one thing right, it's about money and power.
Indeed. They want, the feminists, of course, the extreme feminists, and unfortunately some women's groups are infected by them, say that men are unnecessary. They have to be fought against. We're the ones who should be bringing up our children, so we want power and influence. That's the power bit. But also, we want the lion's share of the money to support them. Now, you know, the great losers there are women themselves. The feminists have done a great disservice to women because they've turned them into needy victims. And the better, more sensible feminists know this and accept it. And
because it traps people, doesn't it, in traditional roles. They're stuck at home looking after kids, and as single parents, as a single parent, it's genuinely difficult to hold down a job and, as I know all too well, hold down a job and look after kids at the same time.
And they tell stories, of course. They tell all the what was run in the Sydney Morning Herald in the Fairfax Press at the beginning of the year, where women were telling stories of abused kids and judges and magistrates making mad decisions.
Yes.
By the way, that was a terrible abuse and defamatory statements about judges and magistrates who do their best in very difficult cases day by day. And not only are there enormous number of provisions in the shared parenting legislation providing for exceptions when there are cases, genuine cases of abuse and violence. But, I mean, what do you do in these situations where there are difficult cases come before the court? But, you know, get back to my point, what the feminists do, they encourage mothers to tell their stories.
Yes.
And they are stories. They were never published in the same papers, responses from fathers. And more critically, the judge's judgments, written judgments, were never referred to.
And that might well say that they're fantasists or that the allegations were untrue or whatever.
They're just liars. Now, we know there are violent men. We know there are men who abuse children, but they're by far the minority. And that's the other thing that worries me about the current debate. Many feminist and women's groups, when they start to talk about separation and divorce, they immediately talk about violence.
Well, oh, yes, absolutely. It's the very first subject, yes.
98% of people separating are good, decent Australian people who are doing their best in difficult circumstances. Over 50% sort their parenting arrangements out themselves without much bother and without any intervention from professionals at all. The other 40% or so have some difficulties, and they're being sorted out very sensibly by the family relationship centres, by psychologists, counsellors and mediators, and sometimes by the courts.
So what's your take on how the new regime is working? And if you could outline...
Very well.
Could you outline how it was and what happened and how it's going?
Well, under the old regime, I used to get calls from very unhappy and sad fathers several times a week. And I'd see people, these fathers, and to give them some encouragement, some coaching, some counselling quite often. I get no calls now at all from fathers because in most cases, and there are exceptions because there are always exceptionally difficult cases, in most cases the father now under the new regime is enjoying a much better relationship in terms of time and quality with his children than he ever was before. And this is suiting not only him and not only the children, who are enjoying knowing that they have the involvement, that they've got two parents, not just one, but it's also suiting the mothers who can...
get on with their own lives.
Well, get on with their own lives. Mm. And, you know, women have got to realise how difficult it is for single mothers and mothers who haven't got the help of the support of a partner, bringing up kids on their own. I mean, it's
really hard work.
I know we've had kids, and it's an enormously onerous thing. Bruce Smyth and others down at the Australian Institute of Family Studies, in one of their studies, I haven't got in front of me at the moment, I can't remember what it was, found that, you know, a lot of mothers were very stressed because of the work involved in bringing up their kids by themselves or with little help, and having to hold down professional jobs at the same time, you know, it's enormous difficulty.
Meanwhile, in the eaves is a bloke who would be perfectly happy to look after his kids. Would be thoroughly delighted.
Exactly,
it's insane.
So, what shared parenting is about is, and I'm not talking about 50-50. Let's get away from that.
Yes, this is a thing that a lot of men do get hung up on. So maybe we should clarify that.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. See, shared parenting. Let's define. Let's say what it is. Shared parenting is a family situation, and let's talk about the. It applies, as I say, to that, but the divorced family, where the children know that they have two parents who love them, who spend time with them, who are involved in their care, welfare and development. Now, it's not good enough to say, as some of the, some commentators, some sociologists, some counsellors, an occasional judge, and certainly some women's groups say that the quality is what counts, it doesn't matter about the quantity. That's just nonsense. Because to have quality involvement, you need time. And Jill Barrett, in our book on shared parenting, we say that that must involve good time spent for at least over 30-35% of the time, the children spending that amount of time, 30-35% of time, with at least that much with each parent.
We're talking with Michael Green, QC. He's the author of the book with Jill Barrett on shared parenting. Peter, you've got a question there.
Michael, under our current system of law, how are the laws? How is the parenting law contact order or the parenting order written when parents are given equal shared or shared parenting? Is one still a primary parent and
the other one
a visitor or not? How is it written up in the court orders?
That's a good question. Thanks for that. My experience, I've never been a family lawyer, but my experience in meeting, talking with lawyers who are in courts every day, they talk about the word is, of course, you know, custody and access have gone, has got residence and conduct, that's all gone. And they talk about, as Peter, you've said very correctly, their parenting orders. And in my experience, the expression is normally lives with. So, Johnny will live with his mother from the first Sunday of the month to the following Saturday, and on the subsequent week he will live with his father from Sunday such and such a time to the following that type of thing.
In other words, lives with. And what happens if one of the parents doesn't hand the child over to the other one at the appropriate time?
Well, there are provisions that we get into the difficult area of then, of course, of supervision of orders and the application of the orders, recovery orders and things like that. I mean, there's provision, of course, for the offended parent to approach the court for the application.
Enforcement.
The enforcement. Thank you. I was getting the word.
You're the lawyer, not me.
I know. I should know, but I'm old and fuzzy in the head. Enforcement of the orders. It's difficult because then if the custodial parent, shall we call her on this occasion, still refuses, the matter has to go to court and there's time involved. And that's when, you know, the processes of counselling and mediation and lots of patience and sometimes lots of money too, unfortunately, involvement and love has come in. See, you can't have a perfect law. You can't have a law which encompasses every human frailty and situation. If a parent just jacks up and says, to hell with you, I don't care, I'm going to do this, put me in jail if you like, it's a very difficult situation for any system, any family law system to handle.
But could we actually see, under this system then, could we see the road signs where in the past we've seen fathers who were supposed to have abducted their children because they didn't hand them over to the other parent at the appropriate time? Could we see the same thing now happening for mothers if they don't hand the children over at the appropriate time under the parenting orders, that there will be the same signs on the side of the highway saying a mother has abducted her children?
It's happening.
It is happening.
Indeed, it's happening. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. There are rare cases, where a mother has been put in jail for disobeying, consistently and flagrantly disobeying court orders. There have been cases of abduction where the children have been brought back from overseas or out of state. It does happen.
Yes.
Within the law, I just believe that most judges and magistrates in these difficult cases are doing the very best they can.
So how strong is the sociological evidence in favour of shared parenting and away from the sole custody model?
Overwhelmingly. We've listed in our book on shared parenting, bringing up your kids cooperatively, just about to be published in the States, by the way. Jill Barrett and I have set out in the back of the book, and we refer to it in the text, all the evidence that supports it. It's clearly overwhelming. A major study, and they're recent stuff, in 2002, 2003, I just forget now. American researchers, a large cohort, they studied and compared the situations of custody, one custody, and some contact and shared parenting, and the overwhelming evidence was that the kids were much better under the parenting regime. One of the best studies was a friend of mine in LA for a doctoral thesis. She looked at a small sample of kids, about a dozen kids over 2 years. And they were kids who had been in shared parenting situations for those 2 years, and they stretched from, 7 or 8 up to mid-teens, and they all reported very positively to their experience. They said, yeah, it was a bit of a nuisance at times, going from mum's place to dad's place, and I'd forget my footy boots and all my music or whatever it is, but it was worth it in the end. The overwhelming message from these kids was, because we knew we had two parents who loved us, and we knew that they were involved in our lives, and we wouldn't have had it any other way.
So there is an impression that the family law industry itself, the courts and so on and so forth, have been very reluctant to embrace this. Is that true?
There are some sections of it. Initially, when did it come in? 2006, didn't it?
Yeah.
And initially there was some. There always will. John, Peter, these, there's an evolution in human events, isn't there?
Yes.
I was reading a quote from a writer in the Herald today. It's the only reason I can remember it, because it happened 5 minutes ago. Nietzsche, who said,
Yes.
It's not enough to prove something. You've got to elevate people to it. It takes time for these things.
Right.
What's shared parenting promotes is a new form of parenting, both in intact and separated families. I mean, it's, there's no longer a primary parent. They're complementary. They're different, but they're complementary roles. Work out the time to suit yourselves. But for heaven's sake, kids have got to have the maturity, boys and girls, they've got to grow up in this mature family situation. And, that's worthwhile working out. The other thing I want to say is this, that it's all very well for some commentators, and you know who I mean, John, and particularly some from Melbourne who are still very reluctant to concede their warm maternal attitudes, and they say nice things about, well, look, oh yes, it's, we really need our fathers to be involved, but oh, not if the kids are too young, not if they're under 3, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Now, according to age and stage, of course, we've got to be sensible, and we've got to manage the logistics to suit the particular situations, for sure. And when there are serious difficulties of disabilities or violence or abuse or whatever, there may be little or no passing of the child between the homes. These things, but they're minority situations. I'm talking about, the 95-98% of Australian families separated and intact. And really, we must keep on developing our concept of parenting. We're not finished yet. I believe, now, to get back to your question first, I believe that the majority of judges, lawyers, counsellors, are in favour of a decent form of shared parenting.
And
I think that the legal profession, I think we have to get to another stage where there's much less involvement than there is at present of the legal profession. I would like to see promoted here an American system which is alive and well in several states. That is, families are encouraged to work things out themselves. Parents who can't, they go to counsellors, mediators, whatever. If still there's no joy, you have a parent coordinator. They sometimes call it them, or masters appointed by the courts or by themselves,
right,
to say to them, this is how it's going to be, folks. You can't agree, this is what's going to happen, and we'll supervise this. And
the destructive custody battles will be a thing of the past.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So that in the end, the only very rarest of cases with peculiar difficulties would get to court. And it's ridiculous that we're still having, protracted property contest in court where people have to spend half their fortune on fighting about things.
Oh, there yes, that,
be stricter rules.
Well, we're out of time, I'm sorry, Michael. Okay. So just,
I'm sorry,
yes.
I've gone on so long, but it's been good to talk.
No, we've been talking with Michael Green, QC. He's the author of Shared Parenting and a great believer that destructive custody battles should be a thing of the past. So thank you very much, Michael, for coming on. We'll be back next week. We'll have Jeff Kennett. He's the former Premier of Victoria. And also we'll be playing material from a health conference in Parliament House just recently. But Jeff Kennett, former Victorian Premier, he'll be on the show next week. We'll be back.
Questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air.